Yin sprang back at me, sending another burst of light and darkness through my mind. Long story, I managed, releasing another groan. I'm totally a secret genius. Just shove me in the corner and throw a sheet over me. Addy, who was going to end up on the same shit list as the Abquist brothers if he didn't stop chuckling, ignored my words and hauled me to my feet. There are no sick days here, no matter the size of the lump on your head, so you better get moving. By the time I prodded the already raised side of my head, Addy was back with all his clothes, and I was again stumbling out of the room. Remember, dining hall in, now 4 clicks. I compartmentalized his words, placing them away for when I could think around the splitting pain in my brain. My natural healing would kick in soon. My body was good with injury. But until that time, I was in half-dead mode. I somehow found my way back to the hall that led to the domed room, with double points for not falling again on my way. And then I was down the stairs and back in the dungeon.
Holy crap, Will, you look like... crap!
Emmy was tugging on my foot. I was on my back, spread eagle across my bed. I'd made spread eagling on the bed a priority, so I hadn't even bothered to look at her after barging into the room.
You weren't at the dining hall, she continued. I was worried you'd forgotten. Some teachers were there this morning, and Jareth. They're observing the recruits. You need to get up.
I propped one eye open a tiny slit, sending forth all of my dark thoughts. This is all your fault, Emmy. You made me come here. She snorted before grasping my leg and hauling me off the bed. I landed hard on the rocks below, and now I had a bump to my butt which would match the one on my head.
Get up now before I make you get up, she ordered.
Damn, she was mean.
Willa.
I glanced up, curious at the adjusted tone of her voice. She was clasping her hands in front of her, lines deepening between her brows. She was about to give me some shitty news.
What?
I moaned.
If they kick you out of here, you don't get to go back to the village. I don't know what happens to those dwellers, but trust me, it isn't anything great.
And there it was. I was suddenly up, on my feet, and out the door, Emmy right behind me. I had no idea what happened to those dwellers either, but I wasn't planning on participating in crushing practice with Rome, while Cohen tried to pin me up against the main gate with a few crossbow bolts. Not getting kicked out was looking like my best option, even though it wasn't such a great option all on its own. I only had to clean and serve one table at breakfast, while Emmy took the table next to mine. Both tables had been, thankfully, filled with perfectly normal, sacred, spoiled, and slightly sadistic souls. Not the special demon souls whose rooms I had cleaned. I felt like the five of them, who were all the way across the other side of the room, spent a lot of the morning locking their bright, gem-like eyes on me. But I could have been wrong. I hoped I was wrong. Because the only reason they were all paying attention to me was because Rome had told them that I was their new dorm bitch. I'd be the first female they'd had to deal with, and probably they were thinking up new tortures to suit me. Specialized torture.
Where are you going now?
Emmy murmured to me as she dashed into the kitchen with an armful of plates. I was on my way out, heading toward the classroom. Classroom 346, I need to stand in attendance in case any of the souls need us to blow their noses or wipe their butts. I was almost out the door when I said that, which meant my voice carried further than I intended. As I turned toward the dining hall, I froze. Every single soul within hearing distance was looking at me. No, glaring at me. Holy baby gods. This was it. The moment I was kicked out of Blesswood to be churned into Bolson feed. As I slowly started backing up toward the kitchen doors, one of the Abquist brothers got to his feet. It took me a few beats to recognize which one, because terror had my eyes functioning at about half sight. Yale. Maybe he was about to persuade me to take my clothes off and parade around as punishment. He was the first to stand, but his brothers soon followed. One by one they stood, and somehow all the eyes in the room shifted to them. I was just about to make a run for it, since this was a golden opportunity, when Yale spoke.
Nothing happened. Nothing to see here.
His voice was low, hypnotic. It rolled out of his mouth and avalanched across the room, and I found my mind fuzzing over as I tried to follow his words.
You have not heard or seen anything out of the ordinary. Go back to your food.
Just like that, the room resumed to its previous level of activity. A group of female souls to my right were squealing over their hair or something. Oh, no, wait. One of them just had a spider on her head. Those weren't squeals of excitement. A group of males to my left resumed bicep curling one of the recruits. Blinking rapidly, trying to clear my head, I tentatively stepped into the room. I waited for the jeers, for the teachers to pounce on me. But no one noticed me. No one was paying attention at all. I swiveled back to face the Abkurs table. It was the center of everything, the entire hall, the entire academy populace. And it was empty. Empty? Why had Yale used his persuasion to help me? Had they saved me just so they could take me down themselves? I wasn't sure what was worse, knowing that I owed them one now, or that things were about to escalate like that one time I told a little lie to explain why I hadn't done the home reading Teacher Harris had given me, only to accidentally put the entire village into a state of lockdown. Turns out, my mother caught a plague has a few holes in it, as far as excuses go. I stumbled out of the dining hall toward the classrooms, and just as I crossed into the first hall, I could have sworn there was a whisper on the wind. We're not done with you yet. So now I was hallucinating, like actually hallucinating, hearing voices and crap, hearing the voices from hell. Maybe they were calling me because the Abkurs brothers were about to end me. It was a given that I was going to hell. All dwellers did. The souls got to go to heaven unless they were chosen to become a god, in which case they went to Topia. They got more than a second chance at life. They got a first chance at immortality, at a living heaven. Or actually, still a dead heaven, but a dead heaven that was still connected to the living world, somehow. And here I was philosophizing about a whole bunch of realms that had nothing to do with me, because I was crazy now. I heard voices in everything. I was screwed. So very screwed. Well, no time to dwell on my fate. This dweller had work to do. My next shift was classroom duty, and I actually arrived there early, for once. The teacher in room 346 was a woman. She was a soul. Her gift was song. And she would randomly burst into a musical serenade whenever she felt like it. I'd already heard three different tunes, and considering the class hadn't even started yet, I knew it was going to be a long session. I stood against the wall with six other dwellers. Three were recruits like me. I recognized the wide-eyed look of fatigue and despair. The other two were residents, wearing stoic and mostly expressionless masks. They never even cracked a smile when the teacher's high notes rattled the windows, which told me they were probably dead inside. They had to be. She was possibly the funniest, most annoying soul I'd met to date, and that was saying something. "Hurry along, my lovelies," she sang, as a few more souls passed into the room. Most of them looked to be my age, or even a little younger. All shiny and full of confidence. Must have been nice to be born all blessed and sacred and destined for great things. To know that you had all the rights. To know that no one would treat you like dirt, or make you scrub windows with your nipples showing. That you might someday become a god. Even if it didn't happen, the thought alone was worth something. Was worth more. A dweller's greatest hope was to make it to Blesswood, or one of the secondary academies. And, I mean, what a life goal, right? What with all the cleaning and not being seen or smelt thing. And I mentioned the nipples, didn't I? Life goals. The final bell rang and teacher Sing-Song walked across to close the door of the room. She paused with her hand on it before a beaming smile crossed her face. "I was worried you three wouldn't be joining us this sun cycle. Come on in, boys." Somehow, I knew it would be them before they even stepped through the threshold. Something about the energy of the Abkurs boys was distinct. Annoying, frustrating, arrogant, superior, soul-sucking. Yale, Eris, and Sirit dropped into seats at the back of the room, long legs sprawled out in front of them, not a book or writing device between them. Teacher Sing-Song made no comment on the fact that they looked like they were only there to darken the classroom a little, instead taking her place at the head of the room. "Good morning, souls, and welcome to a brand new life cycle at Blesswood. I am Teacher Crest, and I will be in charge of this class, Original Gods, and The Beginning. I have been teaching at Blesswood for 20 life cycles, and I have met two original gods in person, so I have as much hands-on experience to share with you as the best teachers in this academy. My gift is song. I'm aiming to become part of the entertainment branch of Topia, if I'm chosen by our wonderful deities." A few souls looked impressed, Some even clapped their hands. Sirit yawned, and what the hell was I doing? I needed to stop looking at those three and focus on my duties. But I couldn't, because it was kind of like a solid kick to the gut, seeing the three younger brothers together. I'd clearly been wrong earlier about Sirit and Yale being twins. Nope, not twins. Triplets. It made the most sense since they all looked to be the same age, were in the same class, and shared the same features. Cohen and Rome were the twins, which would mean that their poor, poor mother had given birth to one set of monster twins, and then, as if that wasn't bad enough, a set of monster triplets. Just to make a complete little monster set. They all had varying shades of the same coloring, so when they were sitting close together, it was actually very easy to tell them apart. Yale had eyes that were mostly green, with only a little gold in them. His hair was also darker, with more black than gold. His colors made him seem almost earthy. I could see the forest in his eyes, and I was sure that I would be able to feel the soot in his hair, not that he'd ever let me touch him. There was something oddly, uncomfortably real about him. Sirit had a little more of the gold. The dark of his hair was tainted by it, lighting almost to pure gold as it reached the tips of the strands falling round his eyes. The green of his eyes was lighter. Half of the pupil melded with yellow gold. He had eyes like a cat. An evil cat. And Eris? Golden Eris. I couldn't even make out the green in his iris from where I stood, or the black in his hair. He was a sun-blessed soul with shining topaz eyes.
Actually, he drawled, his eyes flicking to the side of the room and locking onto me. That's wrong.
I thought that he was answering my thoughts, but when the rest of the classroom swiveled around in their seats to stare at him, he turned his head toward teacher's sing-song.
The bestiary god isn't as nurturing as you might think.
Teacher sing-song stuttered, unsure how to deal with her authority being undermined. I had no idea what she'd even been talking about because I'd been too busy staring at Eris. I wondered how much time had passed. The bestiary god was created by the original god to populate Topia with animal life forms, Sing-Song replied. In a way, that made him a creator in his own right. A lesser creator, maybe, but one all the same.
You described him as a nurturing, forgiving god.
Eris was smiling, his tone smooth as silk, his posture relaxed. I was sure that he was mocking her. I just didn't understand why. She moved her desk in the center of the room, shuffling a few sheaths of parchment.
"Do you have information to the contrary, Eris?" she asked carefully.
There was so much tension in the air. Even the souls were tense, their wide-eyed attention switching from Sing-Song to Eris and back. Was a sacred soul trying to say something bad about the gods? I never thought I'd see the day.
Yes, Eris said.
He was acting like it was his job to inform us all differently, and he was sick of the task before it had even begun.
Terrans, the bestiary god, the original beaster, is also the original asshole. Well, other than Rao, but I'm sure nobody here wants to talk about him.
Cue multiple brain explosions. Sing-Song was shaking, her arm raised to direct a finger toward the door.
Get out! She stuttered, her face now sheet white. I'll not have that talk in my classroom.
I guess there were limits to the Abkurs rule on special privileges. Even if they were going to become future gods, they still weren't allowed to upset the current gods.
Oh, don't worry.
Eris stood but rolled his eyes.
The gods won't smite you for hearing my words.
He paused, waiting as his brothers all rose to follow him out of the classroom, appearing completely unfazed.
And I have a feeling they won't smite me either.
He winked at Sing-Song as he passed, leaving the rest of us standing around, mouths open, metaphorical pieces of our brains scattered all around the room. I walked out of the classroom in a daze after class ended, not even paying attention to where I was going, as two dwellers jostled my shoulders from either side. I was shocked when they quickly dashed away from me, when everyone quickly dashed away from me.
Abkurs brothers, someone muttered, right before the hall completely cleared of people.
I blinked, still a little dazed, and found myself face to face with the triplets. Sirit jumped forward, snatching the timetable out of my hand.
"She's in 2213 next," he told Yale,
who had stepped forward, grabbed the timetable, stuffed it into his pocket, and then bent down until he was on eye level with me, his hands on his knees.
"Hey there, Rocks."
He was grinning, the deep green hue of his eyes pulling me in, and in, until the world was suddenly fuzzy and nothing existed beyond him.
"You're going to skip your next class and come with us."
Of course I was. Why would I do anything else? I nodded. His smile deepened, and he turned suddenly, striding off with the other two. As soon as he broke eye contact with me, I snapped back to myself, as though a frigid bucket of water had just been tossed over my head. "What the hell was that?" I snapped, even though my legs were carrying me obediently after them. One of them laughed, and Sirit turned on his heel, walking backwards while I still walked forwards.
"Aren't dirt dwellers supposed to be silent?"
he asked me, his expression painted in mocking question. "If we were always silent, how would I be able to say, 'Yes, master, no, master, everything you need, master,' every time one of you souls—" I cut myself off, hearing a gasp to my left. It was another of the dweller recruits. She had been scurrying along the corridor toward us, but now she was turning and going in the opposite direction. Apparently she was so desperate not to be associated with me that she was willing to be late and feel the wrath of whatever teacher was in charge of her next classroom.
"Our new dweller's gonna die,"
Seard announced, snapping back around to walk normally. He sounded highly entertained.
"I give her 7 sun cycles."
They were discussing me like I wasn't even there, and they were predicting my death. Lovely.
"Let's see how far we can push her first,"
replied Yale, a laugh in his voice.
"I give her 3 sun cycles." "1 sun cycle,"
Sirit shot back.
"1 rotation,"
Eris teased, glancing at me over his shoulder.
"Teacher Kristen is pretty lenient, so let's see which one of us can push enough of her buttons to get the dweller sacrificed by the end of this next lesson. It has to be a death sentence, too. Whoever manages it first will win a single favor from each of the rest of us."
Holy shit! What if I win? I quickened my footsteps, trying to walk right behind them. I was pandering to their obviously competitive nature, and hoping that I lasted longer than a single rotation in the process. It was a dangerous game, but dangerous games were pretty much the only games I knew how to play, so at least I was in familiar territory.
"Well then, I guess you win the favors," Sirit returned thoughtfully. "Should we let her play?"
he asked the others.
"She doesn't have a gift,"
Yale pointed out.
"She's way out of our league."
They definitely underestimated the power of my clumsy curse. "So there's no harm in letting me play," I added gently. I was attempting to be coaxing. Sirit snorted. He clearly wasn't buying it.
"Sure," he grinned,
walking backwards again to show me the way his cat eyes were crinkling at the corners.
"You can play with the big boys, little dirt dweller."
"But you guys can't use your gifts," I quickly added, now that he'd already agreed. "Because then it's no fun, no challenge. You at least want a little bit of a challenge, don't you?"
"Is the dweller trying to manipulate us?"
Yale asked the others. He sounded unimpressed and bemused all at once.
"Cute,"
Eris added, his silky voice doing funny things to me.
"It manipulates."
"Wow. Ouch." We entered a classroom, and even though I knew it wasn't the classroom I was supposed to be in, I still attempted to move against the wall with all the other dwellers. It was Sirid who stopped me, grabbing my arm with a chuckle, and forcing me past a few rows of shocked souls toward the back row of seats. I suspected that people left the back row of each classroom purposefully empty, just for the Abkurs brothers. He dragged me into the row and forced me to take a seat beside him. Eris claimed the seat on my other side, and Yale lowered himself into the aisle seat, indicating that I'd have to fight past 2 of them if I wanted to escape. I stared back at the sea of faces, all now staring at me. They weren't staring at the Abkurs brothers, even though they were clearly at fault for this. Nope. Apparently, I was going to be the one to take the fall, because nobody wanted to punish them. Teacher Kristen, or at least I assumed it was the same teacher that the guys had mentioned, strolled into the room, her nose stuck into a book, and mumbled,
"Hello, students."
floating eerily over the still-staring room full of souls. She glanced up when she realized that nobody had answered, and her eyes traced all the attention back to me.
Dweller?
She seemed too surprised to think of anything more to say. And now I had a choice. I could get myself sentenced to death by sacrifice and somehow use the favors I won to get myself out of the death by sacrifice, or I could run, hide, play dead, ask to use the bathroom. I really had no idea.
Last I checked.
I attempted to drawl nonchalantly.
That's me. I'm a dweller. Dirtiness and everything. What's it to you, woman?
Her mouth dropped, her fingers loosening around the book. I watched as it fell, seemingly in slow motion toward the floor, landing with a deafening thump that echoed off the walls. She looked toward the souls on either side of me, probably hoping for some kind of explanation. The souls admittedly looked a little put off, but I was sure it was only because they hadn't actually thought that I would try to get myself sentenced to death.
They clearly didn't know me. Now insult her again, Yale suggested,
his persuasive voice washing over me. He wasn't actually using his gift on me, but he was making it sound as though he was. Now I could insult her again, otherwise it would be because of him that I got sentenced to death. I turned to glare at him, but he wasn't paying attention to me. He was leaning back, his arms crossed over his broad chest, his green eyes almost shining, because he was just that entertained by the rapidly reddening face of our teacher.
I'll do what I want, I exclaimed,
surging to my feet and attempting to barge past Eris to poke a finger into Yale's face. Unfortunately, Eris had only drawn back enough for me to get one leg past before slipping forward in his seat again. His knees closed around my other leg, trapping me solidly. He was much stronger than he looked. I froze, my eyes locked onto Yale's face. Whatever insult I had been mustering, ready to shout at him, died. I could feel it fizzle out, making way for shock. I didn't even know why I was so shocked. I really didn't. It had nothing to do with the fact that even sitting next to Eris had been making my head spin a little bit, and it definitely had nothing to do with the fact that him now touching me had scattered my brains to the far ends of the room. I was avoiding looking at him, but Yale was meeting my stare, and he had this knowing expression on his face that made me want to sucker punch him in the face. So, yeah. That's how I ended up sucker punching a sacred soul on my second sun cycle of being one of the luckiest dwellers in the world. He shot out of a seat, capturing my hand as I began to draw it back. All three of the brothers were on their feet now, crowded around me. I had no idea what was about to happen, but the whole world froze when the teacher's voice rang out, loud and cold and shrill.
Dweller!
I froze, my eyes on the ground. There were three sets of shoes, all pointed toward my boots, only a few inches away. The grip on my wrist tightened, and I felt one of them moving against my side.
Forget.
It was Yale, and the word had been whispered into my ear, though it rang around the room with the tenor of traveling magic.
Forget everything you just saw.
The room became still, and I finally glanced up, meeting the eyes of Eris, who stood directly before me.
You win, he whispered,
as the class began to stir back into motion.
Yay,
I mumbled, my tone flat. I needed my head examined. Emmy was going to murder me, which hardly made sense as a punishment for almost having gotten myself killed.
Dweller?
The teacher again. She sounded confused this time.
What are you doing?
He left his paper behind. I spoke up, edging past Yale and breaking into the aisle. I'm in the wrong classroom. I'm so sorry. I dove for the doorway, escaping through before any of them could grab me and question me. I ran through the maze of corridors, trying to read each of the numbers above the doors, even though I was moving too fast to read much of anything, let alone pay attention to where I was going. All I knew was that I had to get out of there, away from the Abcurse triplets, away from the fear and the danger, away from the fact that I might have actually enjoyed it. The rest of my second sun cycle at Blesswood passed without incident, and by without incident I mean that I tripped 3 times, almost stabbed a dweller with a pencil, and accidentally started a tiny little fire in the kitchen. Gods, the way that Jareth had reacted, you'd think I'd burn the entire academy down. The fire had been barely 2 feet tall. Anyway, the point was that there were no more Abkur sightings for the whole sun cycle. They hadn't been in any more classes or at dinner that night. Rumors abounded about what the boys got up to when they disappeared. But all I could think was that the gods were finally giving me a break. I hoped that the break would continue. Otherwise, something told me that the next time I crossed paths with one of those shiny golden assholes, there wouldn't be any more contests to break the rules. The only breaking which would happen would be me. Chapter 6. Early the next morning, Emmy was in lecture mode.
You're playing a dangerous game, Will. Why did you have to challenge them? Why would you call attention to yourself? Sometimes I wonder how much of your curse is God-given, and how much is your insatiable need to stir up your sun cycle. Your boredom is going to be the death of you.
She'd been at it since just after the early bells. I'd spilled on the classroom incident while we got ready, and now I wished I'd kept it to myself. How can you just take the abuse, Em? It's not in me to lie down and let them crush me. I'll stay out of their way as much as I can, but if they come at me, I'm going to fight back. I was totally kidding. I couldn't fight back against 5 massive souls, even if my life depended on it. But I talked a good game. Talk was my thing, and I was working at perfecting it. With a huff, Emmy pushed back her massive silvery hair, artfully twirling it up into a neat knot on top of her head. I roughly gathered my own off my back and threw a few clips in there, hoping the curls would hold. No time for top knots. I had some dorm rooms to sneak in and out of. Plus, I would only be covering it all in a cap. I was fully decked out in Addie's old clothing. Emmy had done me a solid and stitched up the hem and waist on the pants last night, so they fit reasonably well. I took a quick look in the mirror. There was no pretty gloss, shadow, or powder on my face. My hair was hidden beneath the cap, and a dark, baggy shirt attempted to hide my boobs. The outfit was paired with boy pants and my usual boots. I was as male as I was going to get without any actual magic. "I'm heading out now," I announced, interrupting Emmy as she started on her next lecture. "I want to make sure I'm done before any of them return." I hoped like hell Rome wasn't in his room. He'd know that I was coming this time, and with a little luck, he wouldn't be there. Right. Luck. Because that was a thing I was totally familiar with.
"This sun cycle we have to clean and set up the dining room before the souls get there. You can't skip cleaning duties."
She was all aghast and stuff. Sometimes I wondered if she knew me at all. I skipped my duties back in the village all the time. I literally couldn't seem to help from breaking rules. Maybe that was curse-induced too. Or maybe duties just sucked. I didn't believe what Emmy said. I didn't have a death wish. I had the opposite of a death wish. I had a life wish, where I actually wanted to have a life outside of serving and working and be told exactly how to serve and work. I patted her arm quickly before sprinting toward the door. She lurched out to grab me, missing by an inch.
"If I get to the dorms early, there's even less of a chance that one of those souls will be back from their training,"
I whisper yelled as I left. The words lingered behind me, but I didn't stop moving, grabbing a few pieces of breakfast rock bread as I passed the common dweller area. I took the stairs one at a time, even though I wanted to jump up as many as I could. It was safer this way. A broken nose would slow me down, and I was on a mission. The Abkris brothers would not get a jump on me this morning. Willow was going to get one over them. Yes, I now spoke about myself in the third person. It was that kind of mission. The domed room was reasonably empty. I noticed a few dwellers slipping into the dining area. They had the not-be-seen-or-smelt thing down. Eating my food as I ran, I took a sharp left and continued sprinting toward the male dorms. My disguise instilled me with a little more confidence this sun cycle, but I kept my vigilant observations up. I hadn't roamed at this time before, and I had no idea who I might run into. The souls should be either at breakfast or at training in the stadium. But it worried me that the Abkris brothers had been missing for the second part of the previous sun cycle. They were rule breakers like me, apparently. Although, unlike me, it wasn't going to get them killed. There were no cleaning carts conveniently waiting for me, so I had to barge through the storage room door, rip a poor, defenseless cart free, and push it at super-dweller speed toward dorms 1 through 5. The hallway was empty, and I had this amazing feeling inside, all warmth and life. I was totally killing it at being a dweller slave this sun cycle. Killing it! When I was almost at the end, doorway 5 sprung open, and a huge body emerged. With an audible shriek, I skidded to a stop and hit the deck, hiding behind my cart. I was still a few feet from their rooms. If they didn't look this way, they hopefully wouldn't notice a rogue cart just sitting in the hall, all on its own. I heard voices, and keeping my breathing as shallow as possible, I peered through the small gap in the towel area on the cart. Lots of goldenness, muscles, and arrogance came into sight. I couldn't quite tell, but judging from the glow, all 5 Abkris brothers were leaving.
We need to make sure the DOD knows that we're done with this bullshit. When we get back, I'm gonna rip his ungodly head off.
Rome's voice was distinct, a low growl which tingled down my spine and settled somewhere low in my body, which I was so not okay with.
We need to figure out how to end this banishment.
That was Yale. His velvety, persuasive tone was enough to almost have me up and crawling toward him. He was dangerous, affecting me way more than was safe. He continued,
I almost lost control of them previous sun cycle. It's starting earlier than usual this time.
They were moving away now. I could hear them still, but it was getting softer. Shifting my body forward a little, I decided to take a risk and see what was happening. Just as I got my head around the edge of the cart, blood-red and ochre hair came into view.
Well, 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 what do we have here?
Cohen reached out and wrapped his arms around me, and even though he wasn't as huge as his strength-gifted twin, he was still giant size. He lifted me with ease. I flinched, bracing for the pain. You weren't gifted to cause pain unless you were a soul who took pleasure in it.
I'm not going to hurt you, Rox,
he said, whispering close to my ear. My eyes shuddered briefly as I fought for composure. I was potentially a click away from begging for my life, which was pretty uncool considering my life hadn't been outwardly threatened. Yet.
I prefer my pain in a different outlet to what you're imagining,
Cohen continued.
If I cause you pain, you're probably going to like it.
What the holy gods of Topia was he saying? Why was my brain trying to sign me up? Eris. It was his fault. Blame the seduction soul, even if he wasn't touching me. Seemed the simplest option.
Let me go,
I hissed, trying to wiggle out of Cohen's grip. He still held me above the ground, my feet dangling below.
What are you doing here, Dweller? Don't you have rooms to clean? Breakfasts to serve?
Sirit stepped forward. His fitted black shirt had the green of his eyes darkening. His hair looked blacker than usual, like Yale's.
Where were you the previous sun cycle?
What was wrong with me? Why did I ask that? I didn't even care where they were, as long as they weren't near me, I was rejoicing. Rejoicing! The 4 of them now stood in a circle around Cohen and me. The intensity coming from them was enough to have my lightheadedness increasing.
You aren't like other dwellers.
Sirit ignored my question, stepping closer to me. His head was slightly tilted, his eyes locked onto mine. He stared at me like a bug he'd found in his food. I was strange and annoying, and yet, there was a sort of curiosity there, too. Eris stepped forward, and I turned my glare on him. Whatever I was feeling, it had to be his fault. My sanity depended on it.
We never know what you're going to do next, he said. You think for yourself, which in itself is rare on Manatzel.
His summer glow was now seeping into me, warming up my blood.
We might be able to use someone like you, Dweller, if you think you're up for it. The rewards could be great.
They were all close to me, towering over me despite the fact that I was being held off the ground. I'd never been surrounded like this. I'd never had so much beauty and magnetism directed toward me. It gave me both chills and nausea. I had no idea what they were going to do with me, but right now I felt like a little rabbit, completely surrounded by vicious predators. And that was not a great feeling. Cohen dipped his head forward, pulling me back into the trap of his gaze.
Will you help us, Dweller? Remember, if you betray us, well, the pain-pleasure thing can just become pain. I thrive on either. I just prefer it if I didn't have to go there.
Me too. I would definitely prefer that too. He lowered me to the ground, and my legs crumpled beneath me. They didn't seem to be capable of holding me up. I went down,
my body collapsing as vertigo finally got me. Then, in a blink, I was somehow back on my feet.
"Follow us," Yale drawled.
The five of them strode off in the opposite direction of the domed room. None of them looked back. If they had, they would have seen a shell-shocked dweller trying to figure out how she wasn't on her ass right now. I'd been falling, then I wasn't, and no one had touched me. My breathing was all panty and shallow. My body couldn't seem to figure out whether to be excited or to fall apart. I really didn't want to follow them. I didn't want to find myself in another life-or-death situation. But I took Cohen's warning very seriously. If I didn't help them, I was going to get hurt. Damn it. Why was this happening to me again? I was super dweller this sun cycle, and then boom, back to sitting in Bolson shit. The brothers were almost out of sight now, and I couldn't delay any longer. Cursing under my breath, I scrambled after them, my weak legs not helping as I tried to catch up. Unsuccessfully. Those long-legged bastards were faster than me even when I was running. I was running badly, but that wasn't the point. The hall reached an intersection, and the brothers went right, which was the general direction of the sacred sand arena. Why were we heading there? My shift to clean it wasn't for 2 more sun cycles, so this could only mean one thing. They were going to use me for fight practice. No, couldn't be that. They might as well use a straw-stuffed dummy. I'd be as much use. So there had to be another horrible activity waiting for me. I was so busy freaking out about being dragged to the slaughter that I didn't notice the stairs which led down into the outdoor grassed area. I hadn't actually been outdoors since we had arrived in Blesswood, and I'd have liked to enjoy the brush of the warm sun on my face and the sound of a nearby trickling waterfall. Instead, I took a one-way trip down the stairs. I threw my hands out because a broken skull was much harder to heal than broken arms. I closed my eyes and braced for impact, preparing to roll like any good clumsy cursed dweller knows how to do. But there was no impact. No thud as my hands, followed by my head, slammed into the grass below. 2 hard bands were wrapped across my torso, heat surrounding me as I was lifted against a firm body. The sunshine seemed to increase around us, and I knew without even looking up that it was Eris, my sunshine soul. I mean, not mine or anything. That was weird, but you know, a sunshine soul.
You okay there, Willa?
Golden eyes stole my breath. You know my name? I managed to ask. He knows my name?
Come on, seduction. Put our clumsy ass down and let's go.
Cohen shouted his command, already moving toward the sacred sand arena. Eris gave me a wink, and for the second time that sun cycle, an ab curse was dropping me onto shaky legs. He then strode off to catch his brothers, taking all the warmth and life with him. Seduction. Was it just me or was it weird that they called each other by their gift, like it was a name? I hadn't heard any other souls do that, so it wasn't like an in thing. Not that it really mattered with my imminent death looming. I picked up the pace, feeling like a super dweller again because even though they were really good at dropping me, they had also seemed to be pretty good at catching me. The souls were useful for something, at least. Cohen was striding ahead of the rest, appearing almost a speck from my vantage point as the straggling weak-ass dweller. Rome was right behind him, followed by Eris, who had caught up to the others without a problem, despite the burn in my thighs and the pant on my breath. Yale was next, and then Sirit. I laughed, almost causing myself to trip again because laughing and running weren't activities that should be carried out simultaneously. But it was funny. They were lined up in the order of their dorm numbers, from 1 to 5. Painmaster Cohen was 1, Crusher Rome was 2, Golden Eris was 3, Hypnotic Yale was 4, and Evil Sirit was 5. That was one way to differentiate between them.
What are you laughing at?
Sirit slowed until he was beside me, that mixture of curiosity and annoyance back in his eyes. Nothing, 5, I replied, on another pant laugh. I almost tripped again. Talking, running, and laughing was even less advisable.
5?
Yale called over his shoulder.
What the hell is she talking about?
Nothing, 4, I yell panted. This time, I did trip, but I swung out a hand in natural reaction, catching a fistful of Sirit's shirt. He started to go down with me, but then he managed to catch us both, his arm quickly wrapping around my back.
She's ranking us?
Eris stopped running altogether, turning to face us with an incredulous expression. Yale also stopped, but the others continued, too far ahead to realize what was happening.
Why do you keep doing that?
Seard asked, using his grip on me to shake me a little bit. Doing what? I asked, pushing on his chest to indicate that he could put me down. He didn't. My stomach decided to flip.
Falling, tripping, almost getting yourself killed.
What does it matter? I groused. Aren't you taking me to get killed anyway? I spotted Rome and Cohen up ahead. They weren't running anymore, but they weren't coming back to us. They were waiting. Rome had his hand raised to his eyes, trying to block out the sun. Yale laughed.
We're not taking you to get killed.
Maybe we are?
Sirrett seemed to be asking the others a question. He seemed to have forgotten that he was holding me. I looked down at my feet, kicking my boots back and forth a little, trying to reach the ground.
You have a point, Yale returned. She'll probably twist this around so that she finds ways to die, even if that's not our intention.
Doesn't matter.
Sirrett was shaking his head.
She still needs to stay alive until we're done with her. She can die pissing off the DOD, but she can't die getting there. That's just inconvenient.
Right here, I grumbled.
Yeah, you are.
Eris stepped forward, grabbed my arm, and yanked me out of Sirrett's grip. It hurt like a bitch, but I didn't complain, because they were talking about killing me again, and I figured complaining probably wouldn't help my situation very much. I rubbed my shoulder, trying to ignore the way Eris was twisting his fingers through mine, because it seemed to be tied directly to something inside me, twisting and twisting and twisting.
Don't get possessive, Seduction, Sirrett growled, stalking past us. She's our dweller, not yours.
Still right here, I added. I'd also like to have a say if it's dweller claiming time.
No.
Yale was chuckling, moving past us with Sirrett.
You get no say.
Eris tugged me forward, his feet eating up the distance faster than I thought it would be possible for me to follow, and yet somehow I managed it. We were almost to the edges of the academy now, with only the mountains in the distance, separated from us by a short stretch of forest, where Cohen and Rome were waiting.
What happened?
Cohen demanded, once we reached them. His eyes were on my hand, specifically the hand that Eris was holding. His bright green eyes narrowed, luminous and dangerous, and I tried to tug my hand free, feeling a ball of panic lodge in my throat. Now was not the time for them all to start fighting over dweller slave claiming rights or whatever. They could do that after I was dead. Eris tightened his grip, and I swallowed, my stomach lurching.
She ranked us,
Yale replied nonchalantly. He seemed to be the least concerned about the ranking compared to the other two.
She what?
That had been Rome. He looked confused. Right here, I shouted, my temper flaring and bursting before I even had the chance to realize that it had been building. I was panting again, but this time it wasn't from the exercise. It was because the five idiots were messing with my internal organs, or my brain, or something. They wouldn't stop making me dizzy. Eris wouldn't stop holding my hand. Sirrett burst into sudden laughter, just as I managed to finally tear my hand free from Eris. Everyone was staring at me as though I had just temporarily lost my mind, except for Sirrett.
Well?
Cohen crossed his arms, giving me a look.
If you're right there, go ahead and explain yourself.
Nothing to explain, I shrugged.
This is why we don't talk to her.
He tossed his hands up, turning on Yale.
What ranking?
She ranked us,
he repeated.
4.
He jabbed a finger at his chest, and then turned it on Sirrett.
And 5. Don't know what she gave you guys.
Rome's mouth dropped open, but Cohen was all stony-faced, and I caught the edge of his eyebrow inching up.
Is it out of 10?
Maybe. I considered telling him that it was just their dorm numbers, but that wouldn't have been half as fun. It was nice to see him squirm. I considered it payback for the crossbow incident.
What's my number?
He demanded. 1. He frowned, and I knew that he was considering the possibility that this might have been a 1 out of 10 situation.
And him?
Cohen jerked a finger in Eris's direction. 3.
And him?
This time, the finger was jabbed in Rome's direction. too, I said, cocking my head at Rome. Rome was smiling, like he had figured it out. He didn't tell the others, though. He seemed content to allow them to all stand around, baffled. I would say that it made him a little bit evil, but what difference did it make? They were all evil anyway.
Can we figure this out later, maybe?
Once again, Yale seemed unconcerned with the ranking. The others nodded, Cohen casting me one last look before they started moving again, this time through the forest. Because the trees were so dense, we had to slow to a walk, and Yale dropped back to walk behind me. The others didn't seem to notice when he twisted a hand in my shirt and pulled me off my feet. This was just way too much yanking around for my poor cap, and it finally gave up trying to cling to my head. I tried to see through the spill of white blonde curls, feeling like the sudden color was almost blinding after not having it swing into my line of vision for most of the morning. What? A hand slapped over my mouth, cutting off the question before I could voice it. My back hit one of the trees, and I quickly pushed the hair out of my eyes. Yale was only an inch away, leaning into me.
Raise my ranking, he ordered softly.
I felt the heavy roll of his power rushing over me, carrying on the tenor of his voice. Holy shit, were these five competitive or what? I made a sound behind his hand. His eyes narrowed, and he lifted his hand almost suspiciously. Not a ranking, I finally managed to get out. It's just your dorm number. He frowned.
Make me one, then.
You have to be in the first room to be one. He released me suddenly, stalking away.
Hey, Payne,
he shouted, making his way through the trees again.
Switch rooms with me. What?
I heard Cohen shout back. I was still leaning against the tree, my heart threatening to jump out of my chest and bury itself deep, deep underground, where it would be safe. Because I swear to the gods, those boys were going to give me a heart attack. How was that for karma? A sexy soul was going to kill me by frightening me to death. And I didn't just say sexy. None of them were sexy, and their sexiness definitely wasn't the reason for my heart pains. Not that they had sexiness, because they didn't.
Rox?
Sirit strode back into sight, a scowl twisting his lips.
You fall again?
Not sexy. It kind of slipped out. I wasn't sure how. I wanted to take it back immediately, but he had clearly already heard me. He blinked.
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. You go down like a pro. It's a little bit sexy.
My mouth dropped open, my eyebrows inching up. Somehow that had sounded filthy. He seemed to realize it, too. Or maybe he was just reading it on my face. Oh, gods in hell. I need to never speak again. He started smiling, the flash in his eyes driving the heat further into my face. I pushed past him, ready to face my death. Maybe I could ask them to hurry up and save myself from any more of whatever it was they were doing to me. Or maybe I could just trip on something and fall onto a nice suicidal rock. Yeah, that'd be nice. Chapter 7. One moment we were picking a precarious path through the mountains about a mile from the boundary of the academy, and then, suddenly, we weren't even in Blesswood anymore. I gasped, my footsteps halting, my eyes going wide. The seemingly endless stretch of mountainous terrain before us had dissolved, and a dark, damp-smelling cave had loomed in around us, only a pinprick of light visible in the distance. What in the world of the gods? I spun around, trying to take in everything at once, even though it was too dark to take in even an inch of the everything.
Exactly.
Rome had been the one to utter the reply, sounding right behind me. He had dropped to the back of the procession after declaring to the group that I kept getting into trouble whenever he left me unsupervised, whatever that was supposed to mean. He had been the one to plant a hand on the center of my spine and push me forward, initiating this trip through reality. What do you mean, exactly? I asked, in the general direction of his voice.
The world of the gods,
he replied, making me realize that I was staring at the wrong patch of darkness. I adjusted my eyes, and then it hit me. No, it didn't hit me, because that was impossible. This cave couldn't be Topia. The Abkurs brothers couldn't possibly know a secret passage into Topia.
Anything is possible, Rox,
Sirit muttered, grabbing my wrist and dragging me through the darkness toward the little pinprick of light. I must have spoken out loud, or else they could read minds. Knowing my luck, it was the latter. As soon as Sirit's skin touched mine, my head was flooded with conflicting images. Thoughts. Memories. I had no idea what they were, but men and women pictured in my mind weren't anything like the souls I knew. They wore robes as they strolled past insanely gorgeous scenery. Lakes, rivers, oceans. Some of them were sitting on floating marble platforms which looked down over miles and miles of sky. Sirit was using his trickery gift to fill my head with nonsense, and yet I couldn't help the feeling that this particular nonsense was actually real. Because I was in Topia. Those demon souls snuck me into fucking Topia. Emmy wasn't just going to kill me anymore. She was going to cut me up into tiny little pieces, put each piece of me into a tiny box, and feed each box to a single bolson, which she would burn, and then she would separate the ashes of the burnt bolson into tiny little piles, and then she would put each tiny pile of ash into a tiny box, and then...
"Welcome to the world of the gods,"
Rome drawled, as we stepped from the cave and into the glaring sunlight. Sirit let me go, only to grab me again as I pitched forward. My feet were trying to move before my mind had caught up to the world in front of me. It was beauty. It had to be beauty personified in the land, because there were no other words to explain what I was seeing. Everything glowed, like the souls, but a million times stronger. As if the gods lived on the sun somehow, and they'd turned down the heat, but not the shine. The land spread out far beyond what I could see. It was all sparkling lakes, rolling mountains, and everything that the tales of Topia had promised. Everything that the tales of Topia had promised to the souls that were going to become gods. It was more, too. More than the stories and the lectures and the songs. I was now staring at the same things that I had seen when Sirit had dragged me through the cave and into paradise. Floating marble structures, 20 feet in diameter, drifted lazily above our heads. I couldn't see beyond them to know if anyone was up there, but who cared? They were just floating there. It was magic, pure and simple. Powers beyond anything I had ever seen, and beauty beyond what I could understand. I finally get it. I must have murmured it out loud, because 5 sets of gem-like eyes were suddenly focusing on me, 5 massive bodies surrounding me.
"What do you finally get, rocks?"
Cohen stepped into my space again. He wasn't the only one. I could feel another at my back, but I was too terrified to turn and find out who it was. Trying to breathe around the panic, I stuttered out, "I get why you souls spend your lives trying to get here. It's perfect." I heard a snort of laughter to my left, and somehow knew that it was Sirit.
"Don't let the beauty fool you," he said.
"This world is filled with as many ugly assholes as Minatzel."
I found myself swiveling to see him better, to read as much as I could from those words. It always felt like the brothers were speaking in riddles, half-truths. What they said and meant were definitely 2 different things, but that was hardly surprising from a trickery-gifted soul like Sirit. "How do you know so much about Topia? How are we even here?" I asked, glancing between the 5 of them. "How did you find the entrance and then not die getting here?" Because that was supposed to be the requirement for entry. You had to die and then hope that a god chose you for immortality, to rule with them here in paradise. Silence greeted my question. Somehow, though, they managed to exchange a single glance between the 5 of them. Crazy. These souls were a full range of crazy and powerful, not to mention scary and gorgeous. And they brought me into Topia. Right in that moment, I couldn't figure out whether to hug them or run the hell away from them. They had taken me to the world of the gods, the one place a dweller would never, ever go. Ever. It might have been crazy, but it was still a gift. I didn't even care if they killed me. Right then, I was happy. My joy spilled out, and in my usual act-before-you-think fashion, I dived forward. In the brief moment before impact, I saw raised eyebrows and wide eyes, and then I landed against the brothers. I could only manage to get my arms across 3 of them, but that was enough. I hugged them as tightly as I could, their bodies solid against me. "I don't even care how we got here. Thank you. I can't believe this. I'm in Topia." I was muttering nonsense, my own happiness leaking out in random babble. Cohen had been the one in the center of my hug, next to him Sirit, and on the other side was Eris. None of them had moved. They just let me hold them for an awkward amount of time, and I couldn't believe that I wasn't being tossed across the world yet. The silence washed over us, the peaceful nature of this land. It was almost like we were secured in the clear perfection of this immortal world for one click in time, and it was kind of nice. For that instant, I forgot that the Abcursed brothers were scary souls who would probably get me sacrificed to the very gods we were now in close proximity to, because they actually felt like friends. A throat cleared behind us, and Yale said distinctly,
"There better be a reason you're hugging them and not me, and you better start sharing it around."
Right. Crazy competitive. "I was going to four," I started to say, before he cut me off.
"One. I'm number one."
I pulled back and turned toward the persuasive soul. His eyes were so green in that moment that they didn't even remotely look natural. His hair shone more in Topia's light than it ever had in Manatsol. It was the color of thick, dark ink, piled over gold, mixed just enough for the gold to rise up and peek through the darkness. He was close, but he didn't step into me. I knew he wanted me to come to him, but something held my feet firm to the ground. Beside him was Rome, the other one to not fall victim to my enthusiasm before.
"We don't have time for this."
Rome grunted out the words, clearly annoyed by something.
"Yale, go over there and get your hug so you can feel equal, and then we need to get to Lucio."
Noting my confused expression, he added,
"It's where the original gods reside."
"Wait just one freaking click. We can't go there. They'll kill all of us. You guys might be a big deal in Blesswood, but here you're just souls who snuck into their world. You haven't been chosen by the gods yet. This is suicide." Rome shook his head.
"We're not going to lose you. You are."
"Say what now?" Cohen sounded from over my shoulder.
"The gifts of the souls are God-given, which means they can sense our energy. We can't get close without alerting one of them, but you? You're a dweller. You have no gifts, unless we're counting your lack of common sense and general physiological imbalance as a gift. Dwellers can't even get into Topia without touching a gifted one. They'd never expect it. You're the perfect one to sneak in."
I was screwed. This is why dwellers and souls were not friends, because of this. With a huff, since it didn't matter anymore, I shoved through the brothers, not even trying to be gentle. I strode a few feet from them, needing the space. I took another long look at the world. I wanted to imprint it in my mind, if this was the last thing I'd ever see. I was especially entranced by the huge ocean of water out in the distance, so vast that there was no way anyone could swim across it. I'd never seen anything like that before and knew I never would again.
"I can't believe I hugged those assholes."
Muttered curses spilled from me. I hugged them. Stupid ab curses. Should have known they'd be bad luck with a surname like that. Cursed. Just like my life. Strong arms wrapped around me from behind, and I found my body lifted up off the ground and spun around until I was staring at Yale. His hugeness engulfed me, the strength in his grip almost too much for my poor little heart.
"No one ever hugs us for no reason."
His voice was a whispered caress across my body, like the sweetest, most seductive breeze ever.
"No one gives themselves without expecting something in return. You honored us, little dirt dweller."
Wow, backhanded compliment much? He'd been waiting for me to hug him, and I hadn't. That kind of hurt my heart, and I had to lift my arms and loop them around his neck, even though he'd also half insulted me. I had to squeeze him toward me to try to ease some of the hardness in his cool gaze. My body softened against him, and I felt some of his anger ease. This was all insanity, all of it, that I could be so forward with any boy, let alone a God-blessed soul. That was crazy. But here we were, hugging. In Topia. Shit, maybe I was already dead, and this was hell. Note that I said hell there, definitely not heaven, even if it felt a little bit like heaven. Yale's huge body rumbled beneath me, and an energy drifted from him toward me. It was warm. Then, in a flash, I was back on my feet. I found myself feeling a little bereft. He strode away. I stared after him, not sure what just happened.
"We won't let you die, Willa."
Cohen distracted me, and I flinched back at the look on his face. He wore his hard, carved-from-granite face, which was 10 types of scary. I associated it with the trying to shoot me with a crossbow incident.
We need you to help us, and then we'll make sure that no one at Blesswood messes with you again.
Sucking in deep, I tried to gather up every iota of bravery inside of me. I had, like, a teaspoon so far. The app curses.